You're listening to Cairo News Radio Middays.
Welcome back to Cairo News Radio Middays. Jack Stein and Spike O'Neill, Mr. Threaten Another Man's Life with a Baseball Bat. Isn't that right?
It's one man's threat is another man's instructional swing video.
Joining us live in the studio is the world-famous Jonathan Cho. How are you, sir? Good to talk to you again. How long has it been, John? I thought I talked to you about a year and a half ago, maybe about a year ago, I think, last time you and I talked.
A long time, brother. Long time.
Long time, sir. But this morning, when I was awake at 5:22 in the morning, thanks to Toby Keith, I was scrolling through Twitter, and you popped up, and I saw footage, which I initially thought was just kind of one of your excellent pieces of reporting that you do at Cho Show on your Twitter page. And I thought it was just you going to interview a guy on the street, and he's heating up a meth pipe with a blowtorch, with a little butane kind of oven. And then all of a sudden, just everything, it goes complete chaos. And it was some of the most compelling footage that I've seen in a long time. Do you want to walk us through what you experienced downtown?
Yeah, I mean, I can pick it up right from there. I'm at the corner of 3rd and James, in downtown Seattle, just a block away from Seattle City Hall. The mayor, Bruce Harrell, has a bird's eye view of everything happening. I'm going across the street because this is fascinating. There's a guy using a creative method to light up his meth pipe, and I'm talking to them. The fellas are very cordial.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere, I see this figure approaching me. I didn't know what was going on. Then the two guys I'm interviewing say, "Get out, get out."
To you?
To me.
You.
They're warning me. And I look up briefly, and then I hear the words, "I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you." And, you know, I'm usually pretty steady with my camera, but I kind of double punched and I stopped recording. I just ran for my life across the street. I immediately hit record on my phone again and pointed in the direction of the guy. And I noticed he was carrying a massive baseball bat. I don't know if it was an aluminum bat or a wooden bat or what, but he was carrying the bat. And I could not believe this encounter had just happened. Thankfully, I saw an SPD cruiser, flagged down the officer, and immediately pointed to this fella saying, "He basically tried to kill me, almost assaulted me. I got away. I'm fine." The officer, took our information, heard both sides of the story. And thankfully, they did their due diligence, at least eventually, and realized that the guy who tried to attack me with his bat had a warrant out for his arrest. There you go. He was arrested, and I'm going to see him in court today.
So what time of day was this?
It was right after, maybe around 1 p.m. roughly.
Oh, well, midday?
Midday. This happens.
So the other thing about this bat, if we can just point this out as well, this is not like a guy who is on his way to T-ball practice and he sees Jonathan Cho and he says, "I don't like that guy's reporting. I'm going to give him peace of my mind." This bat is aluminum and it has Mac Attack written on the side of it. So I'm assuming that he was walking around with it kind of like, in that one Tarantino movie, you know what I'm talking about? I feel like this is that kind of a thing where this is this guy's primary weapon. It's kind of his accoutrement that he goes around with, I'm sure, intimidating other people. And the other thing that shocked me about this story is when, in the piece of footage that I saw, when the police officer looks at you, he seems almost so deflated about the issue, and he goes, "So what do you want to do? So do you want to press charges?" And you go, "Yeah, I want to press charges. The guy threatened my life." And he's like, "Okay." I mean, it just seems so sad.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that reaction as well. And the backstory here is initially, and look, there's police body cam that I'm going to eventually request. I want to see the whole interaction myself. But the officer basically said initially, "Hey, we can't arrest him." I'm like, "What are you talking about? You can't arrest him." Well, in fairness, the officers didn't see what actually happened, right? So it's
okay.
My word against, this fella's word. But then the moment, I showed the footage and I also, again, emphasized that this guy threatened to kill me. That's when they said, "Okay, we're going to get him for felony harassment."
Should we
now
play this here, Jack?
Yeah. So this is
Take Jonathan's word for it.
So this is him being put into the van where he also threatened your life again. So here's what that sounded like.
"Keep doing that. Keep doing that. Scrap your ass. They're going to be scraping your ass up off the concrete."
For you listening at home, that was "scrape your ass off the concrete."
Right. So this is him being loaded into the paddy wagon and taken away. And the thing that I find interesting about this is that to threaten somebody's life in the presence of a police officer is a crime, right? I mean, the cops hear him actively threaten your life, and they just go, well, I guess we're just going to have to add another charge on top of it. You're actually going to go to court, correct, to talk about this in, what, 10 minutes is when you're going to be there, 15 minutes?
Yeah, roughly, 2:30, you know, King County Jail Court. This is when, you know, all these, you know, defendants show up for first appearances. I will be frank, though, this is really the first time, you know, I'm usually covering these cases, right? I'm covering the perpetrators as a local right. journalist here. This is the first time I'm going in as the victim, you know, yeah. and I'm going to share my side of the story.
So, I mean, what was the emotions going through your, I mean, obviously when someone's got a bat and they're coming for you, you're not thinking to yourself, you know, obviously this is a nice guy. I mean, what was that set of emotions like for you?
I mean, honestly, Jack, just looking back at this, obviously shocked, but in now that I'm kind of letting everything sink in, I'm just like tired.
Yeah, you know.
Man, I'm just trying to cover the city, man, and I wish more local journalists would come out here, but no one else is coming out here. And let me be very clear, I show up to 3rd and Cherry pretty much once or twice a week because, keep in mind, this is where the tents were popping up regularly, one of the most notorious encampments, open-air drug use, a drug den, a trap tent, black market, selling drugs out of here. And the mayor, to his credit, has finally focused on this strip and has cleared the tents. And I was going back kind of to show what was happening, and the street was amazing, actually. I saw SDOT workers there clearing everything, and it was just this unfortunate encounter between me and this man I've never seen in my life. And again, let this sink in. A guy walking around broad daylight downtown Seattle with an aluminum baseball bat? I mean, that's like one of those only in Seattle moments.
I wish it was only in Seattle, but it's pretty much everywhere. So you're down there trying to cover the news stories that affect all of our lives. And the police, you're lucky enough to find a cruiser conveniently rolled by. Thank goodness. And when you say to the cops, you know, yes, I want you to arrest him. There must have been, you talk about how tired you are. I imagine the police feel the exact same way. That they got this guy and they know how it's going to play out. They're going to take him down. They're going to process him and he's going to be kicked right back onto the streets. I mean, I'm not, you know, excusing the officers for, I'm not trying to say they don't want to do their job. It's got to be so frustrating and tiring to them to be powerless to get this guy put away so he isn't a threat to somebody with a baseball bat on the street at 1 p.m.
Yeah, and that's exactly part of the equation. I have so many SPD officer friends who tell me the same thing. You know, Jonathan, you're showing all the raw realities on the ground happening in Seattle, but what can we do? We're handcuffed. You know, that's the phrase I hear all the time because the concern is, will the prosecutors prosecute? Even if the prosecutors do decide to prosecute, what will the judge do at the end of the day? The real story here is, what is the judge going to do this afternoon? Because I believe prosecutors are going to bring charges against this fella.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that they would, because if just watching the footage, I'm seeing somebody, and again, this is my amateur opinion, but he's not going away. Do you know what I mean? He's trying to cross the street towards you. And so I think to myself, if there's anybody who's that irrational and who's that dangerous, they likely should have charges brought against them. But I mean, Jonathan, when you're out there and you're with most of these people who are living in this, I've watched a ton of your footage. Most of them seemed pretty keen to talk about it in a very peaceful way, in a very matter of fact way. I've seen a lot of the posts that you make on Twitter. It seems like most people are just kind of homeless and they're just dealing with it and they're heating up their meth pipe or, you know, living in their tent or whatever it is. It doesn't seem like a lot of them really take it to this level with you in particular, I guess, when you have that camera and you're just kind of hanging out with them.
Yeah, you hit it right on the head. And I think most of the people out here who are reasonable and rational, who want to talk to me, who want to have their stories heard, who want to have a voice. But you've got a handful of these folks who are just a menace to the community, and they're just walking around here in Seattle.
Well, you had mentioned that he had a warrant for his arrest, an outstanding warrant this guy did. And Lisa Mannion, the King County prosecutor, said that she is going to focus on repeat offenders. You know, you talk about what will the prosecutor do? What will the judge do? Hopefully that's a valid statement. And I'm sure that it is. I have no reason not to believe Lisa Mannion that she's really going to follow through on repeat offenders and get these guys some actual jail time, some consequence for actions like this.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting. I look forward to what, you know, his public defender is going to say. And, you know, I want to learn more about this man. Where is he from? Where was he living? Where did he come from?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many unanswered questions. I don't even know this guy's name yet. So, we'll have to wait and see.
Are you allowed to photograph inside court?
I am. But, you know, what a lot of judges have been doing lately is that just, you know, the public defenders say don't record anything showing their face. So you can only record from the neck down.
Okay.
I mean, I know what this guy looks like. He's clearly in my video. So.
Jonathan, Joe, I know you got a hard out. I know you got to get out of here. I know you got to go to court. But thank you so much for your time. Thanks so much for sticking around. And at Cho Show is the best place where people can get in touch with you on your Twitter page, correct?
Yep, C-H-O-E-S-H-O-W, or at fixhomelessness.org.
Thank you so much, sir. And again, best of luck to you in court, my friend.
Yeah, keep us posted.
Yeah, I'm here to help in any way possible, guys, moving forward.
Yeah, we'll be in touch, man. We'll get you on and we'll get an update as to what's going on with the man who made an attempt on the world-famous Jonathan Cho's life. So thanks so much for dropping in, man. We appreciate it. So, Spike, what else have we got on the docket here?
Well, we were going to talk about the Chip Canal Bridge cleanup.
Yeah, we could talk about that. I was thinking about going into the King County Sheriff's Office and talking about how it won't be staffed.
As far as resource officers?
Yeah, and I was thinking this was a really interesting decision made by the King County Sheriff's Office. Do you want to go into the fine details about this?
Yeah, so basically it's a budgetary reason. There are four schools that was announced today from the Lake Washington School District that will not have SROs, which is that security resource officer? Is that what the S stands for?
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Security resource officer. Yeah, correct.
Yeah, and it's a decision based upon manpower. King County Sheriff's Department just doesn't have the manpower to keep doing that. And I think three of the four schools have already been listed as they will no longer have resource officers as of next year. I think one school will still continue to do that. I'm bringing up the story, make sure I get the right school. Because when I misquoted schools' closing a couple weeks ago,
I scared
some parents. Let some parents. No.
Right. It looks like
This year it's going to be Evergreen Middle, Eastlake High School, Timberline Middle School, and Tesla STEM High School, all because of staffing shortages at the sheriff's office. Only Eastlake High. Eastlake High will be staffed through the year with SROs, but I think they also are going to lose, Eastlake High is going to lose their SROs next year because of the staffing issues. And this is the issue. What is the answer here? Is it resource officers? Is it tighter doors? Is it, you know, a passageway where everybody is cleared? Like, you were telling me that you had a school that you went to speak at, and they let you in a holding area, basically?
Yeah.
And then into the school area proper?
Yeah, so that was when I was in New Hampshire. So this is kind of a small detail in my life that most people don't know. But when I dropped out of school at 18, I went to go live with my dad, which was probably one of the worst choices I ever made in my life. So I moved from California to New Hampshire. Pittsfield, New Hampshire, which is this little teeny tiny, it's like one of those World War One towns, you know what I mean, where they
There's a river running through that town where the mill used to make ammunition. I know the town well.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. And now the mill is a leather factory where, right. You know what I mean, that kind of vibe. Yep. And also, you know, the dam hasn't been open since 1946 when it rusted shut. You know, that kind of place.
There's 100 little towns like that through the New England area.
So that the town was very, very small, but it had some of the highest instances of domestic violence out of almost any other town in New Hampshire, if you can imagine that.
Well,
so
it's lack of opportunity, economic desperation.
Yeah, that was a big part of it. And the school would, you know, maybe 200-300 kids in, you know, in high school, maybe 200 kids in elementary school. And but the schools were stacked on top of each other, by the way.
Right.
That's how small this town was. So, but the way that they did security at this school was they had basically an entryway into it. So in order to get in, you couldn't just open the front doors. You had to be buzzed in. And then once you were buzzed in, there was this little decontamination area, basically, where in order to get further into the school, you had to be buzzed in again through another set of doors, which were bulletproof. Now, I know this sounds kind of carceral. I know this kind of sounds like it's a prison.
Yeah.
But that was one of the most secure schools that I had ever been to in my life. And the reason was because mom and dad would be fighting and they would try to kidnap the kids. I know it's a harsh reality. But it happened enough that the school made the decision that they needed to put in this little buffer area to prevent hysterical people from entering. Now, when I think about locally, when I think about security resource officers, there is this argument against having resource officers at schools. I don't buy it. They say that it puts kids on edge, that it makes kids feel weird, that it makes kids feel uncomfortable. When I was in high school, we had a school resource officer. Her name was Pam. She was the nicest lady you would ever want to speak to. She was also a coach on the softball team. She was an unbelievably kind woman. And any instance which you would point to of a resource officer, I don't know, abusing a child, those are few and far between. I looked at the data on this. There's not a lot of stories outside of some extreme examples of officers on a campus violating a child's rights. Now, I've seen it a couple of times. I've seen a couple of five-year-olds getting handcuffed by a resource officer that's got maybe a little bit too much
too much Red Bull that
morning.
Yeah.
But in other instances, you see how they become a part of the school community. And so I think it's just a shame that the sheriff's office isn't going to be able to provide resource officers because of a lack of staffing. And I would hope that they could get these resource officers back in there, because I just think it's good for schools. I think that schools should have officers. I think they should have armed cops there, in my humble opinion. I think it's good for the kids.
I couldn't agree with you more. The incidence of resource officers being a problem in schools, sometimes you hear it from a racial perspective.
Yeah.
You know what? And if that's the case, that's a flawed resource officer. That's a missed opportunity to build a bond between law enforcement and communities of color, low-income communities, who have had horrific experiences with law enforcement. I understand. I fully respect that has been the case. But why not take this opportunity to put the right people adequately trained into these schools as a deterrent for violence from outside and to help build a relationship with the students in that school?
Yeah, I mean, do you remember that text that we got on Monday about the texter's name, but he said, what policy would you guys institute to prevent a school shooting? I would put school resource officers in every, I would make it a federal, if I was king of the world, I would make it a federal program. I would make it a federal institution. If the states couldn't provide it for themselves, and I would have it be a police force, and their entire job is to protect the kids. Now, sometimes this fails, like how we saw in, I think it was Parkland, where there was a school resource officer there who was a coward and decided to leave those
Uvalde
kids.
Uvalde was the same way, man.
Right, exactly my point. But I suppose if we treat it in the same way that we treat the Secret Service, you have one job. Yeah. You have one job to do. And if we can vet people, I think that it might be better than what we saw previously, right? I mean, I think one of the reasons why so many lives were saved on Monday was because there were officers who were willing to do their job, as opposed to what we saw in Uvalde or what we saw in Parkland when that one coward left those children to die. And I will say that unabashedly about that man. I think he was a security guard or something to that effect.
You're right. Adequately trained, adequately staffed. That's probably the first of many building blocks it would take to stop this problem.
All right. When we get back, we are going to do a little international news, Spike, because I have been following what's been going on in France. And I got to tell you, my friend, I get protests. I like protests. I think protesting is good. But what they're protesting over, I think, is a little silly.
It's a little over the top. It's a little dramatic. To put a Frenchman, it's dramatique.
It's a little je ne sais quoi. Yeah. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this. Always the tricky thing with breaking news, Spike O'Neill. Sources tell CNN. Always the tricky thing here. The New York grand jury has decided to indict Donald Trump. Sources tell.
Well, they're also CNN. Telling Fox News, so
okay, all
I think
right.
we may well, be able to trust these sources right. at a point.
Well, as long as we got two of them, I'm totally fine.
Yeah, I hear you. It's so funny when you we have the news on here at the Cairo News Studio. Mm-hmm. And we have, you know, we have different stations on. We want to see both sides of an issue or different points of view, I should say.
Sure.
But when the Chirons are identical.
Yeah.
New York grand jury votes to indict former President Trump.
So we're not quite sure about the charges quite yet. It looks like the Manhattan District's Attorney's Office has been investigating the former president in connection with his alleged role in a hush money payment scheme and cover-up involving adult film star Stormy Daniels that dates to the 2016 presidential election. So Trump called it. He predicted it. The general argument about this, Spike, is that I've heard from people is that there needed to be some prosecutor out there who was willing to break the ice when it came to giving Trump an indictment. And so that's why this case is going through, even though it's not a very strong case. I have heard this from both leftist commentators and people on the right about this particular issue, and that the strongest case against Donald Trump is in Georgia, But whether or not he will actually face any real consequences as a result of his behavior in 2016 is unlikely at best.
Well, I don't know if I would frame it as the strongest case as the most severe charge.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, because we really don't know what the grand jury has seen in the way of evidence and testimony.
Correct.
And yeah. Documentation. But, you know, I mean, you kind of educated me on how a grand jury works. They voted. They had to have a majority of the grand jury members
Correct. Vote
that there was sufficient evidence to bring an indictment. This doesn't mean anything except he will be charged.
Yes.
There was adequate evidence to charge the former president of a crime. And I believe misrepresentation on tax records is the crime I hear it's most likely to be charges brought up for, you know, and that with relation to campaign finance laws, but there were also some federal tax laws that were in question as to how various charges were classified, whether that was falsification of tax records. Again, this is literally just breaking. It hasn't even hit the floor yet. It broke so recently.
And I have heard as well, though, that from varying legal analysts that make the argument, well, he was running a campaign at the time. His business was being run by other people. And so he could, in terms of an argument that he could make or that his lawyers could make, he could say, I didn't know anything about it. So, again, breaking news, just discovering it at this point in time. But I do think, just in what I have seen of this case, Spike, and I'm willing to change my opinion if new evidence comes out, as I am sure it will, coming out over the next couple of minutes, I would assume a couple of hours. I'm going to just go out and say that this is probably the weakest case against Donald Trump.
Likely
only the beginning when it comes to the series of lawsuits the series of charges that will be brought against him as a result of his behavior when he was president of the United States.
And there are multiple cases in multiple jurisdictions from New York with the with this case in New York City about tax law and finance law, campaign finance law in Georgia with the interference, his accused alleged interference in the Georgia election for president in 2020. There's the case of classified document mishandling in Florida with relation to Mar-a-Lago. And there's the case of the January 6th attack on the Capitol and whether or not the president had any involvement or accountability, you know, in that case as well. So there's multiple cases going on simultaneously in multiple jurisdictions. As you mentioned, this is just the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a question, would there be adequate information to bring charges through a grand jury? And apparently there has been. He has been indicted in the hush money case, is all I'm seeing on comments. We will have a special report from CBS at 2:40 in just about a minute.
Excellent.
So, yeah. And, you know, I think we've done a very, you know, safe job of on-flight speculation. You know, we've stabilized the plane. A pilot will be coming down the aisle momentarily to take control of the aircraft and get you to the ground safely with as much accurate information as we can bring for you.
And on top of that, just to remind people, this is the first time in history a former president has been
indicted on criminal charges.
Criminal charges. Yeah, so we've got about 15 seconds here before we go over to CBS. And so they're going to take it over for us and provide any new information that they have for us. And you're listening to – oh, go ahead, Spike.
Yeah, I was going to say we'll be back on the back half of that, depending upon how long the CBS report rolls. We're not really sure as this is happening in real time for you, Seattle. It's Cairo News Radio. Here we go.
News has confirmed that the Manhattan grand jury has voted to indict former President Donald Trump. And we've just gotten word that Mr. Trump's lawyer says he's been informed – by the grand jury, by lawyers for the grand jury, of the indictment. This comes after weeks of speculation. The grand jury here has been investigating Mr. Trump regarding an alleged payment he made to Stormy Daniels, the adult film star, shortly before the 2016 election. Allegedly, he paid her off to keep her quiet. She did not want her to talk about their alleged affair. This would be obviously a landmark moment. No former president has been indicted for a felony charge in American history. We are still waiting for some official word from the Manhattan grand jury, but CBS News has learned that former President Donald Trump has been indicted by the Manhattan grand jury, and that indictment has now been confirmed by Mr. Trump's attorney. CBS News Special Report. I'm Steve Futterman.
Well, there you have it. It's not just our word. CBS will tell you.
So it looks like we're going to take a quick break, though.
We can do that. And
okay, and then we'll be right back after that break. But again, former President Donald Trump is facing criminal charges for his behavior in 2016 around campaign finance. We'll see how this pans out over the next couple hours. You're listening to Cairo Radio. We'll take a really quick break, and we'll be right back right after this with more breaking news on Donald Trump. Welcome back to Cairo Middays. Breaking news. A Manhattan grand jury has voted to indict former President Donald Trump on criminal charges. Joining us, Randy Peppel, the Republican strategist. Thank you so much for joining us on such short notice, my friend.
Thank you.
So what do you make of this? You're seeing this as a Republican strategist. Can you kind of break it down for us, what your insights into this might be?
Well, first off, I'd say this is the weakest case of the half dozen cases that are out there pending against the former president. I mean, this is the one that really has the least amount of juice. And so that means the reality of this is that the real story here will be how he reacts and how he motivates his supporters to react. That will end up being the story, because ultimately this case will end up getting thrown out at some point. I mean, it is not a strong case against him, but he tends to overreact. He tends to fight back when he's in a corner without much thought for consequences. And should he do that in this case, I think that becomes the much bigger story than the indictment itself.
I have heard several other commentators say that this will help Trump in the polls overall, that this will actually boost his numbers and galvanize supporters who were maybe on the fence a little bit. Have you heard anything similar to that?
Well, I think you've already seen that his poll numbers are up in the last month. DeSantis is down a little bit and Trump is up. So already it is helping his poll numbers among the Republican base. But again, this is going to be temporary. That ultimately what will decide how this is interpreted, even by his base followers, is what actions happen in the coming days, in the coming weeks. Because if the type of violence that some of his followers, some of his most extreme followers, are looking to or considering, unless he renounces that completely and fully, that will be on him. And that will be the story.
Randy, Randy, do we know what he's being charged with yet? We won't know that for a while, right?
Well, I mean, the exact charge is, it's revolving around the payments made during the 2016 presidential campaign to silence claims of an extramarital sexual encounter.
Right, so is it campaign finance, violations, or is it tax violations, or?
It's campaign finance violations somewhat, but it's also the fact that he reimbursed Michael Cohen, his lawyer, for these payments while he was president. He signed the checks in the Oval Office, evidently. And it's those payments that the state of New York is saying, you did not report those correctly. That's where the law was broken. That's why I'm saying it's really weak. But, I mean, he broke the law. But of all the cases, I mean, this one has the least amount of facts behind it to justify going this far.
And I have heard commentators say that this is effectively just breaking the ice and being the first charges brought against him, that somebody had to come out and somebody had to bring charges. And it ultimately ended up being Alvin Bragg in this case. Do you think that that's part of it as well, that there was maybe a hesitation on, do we indict the former president? Who's going to go first? Maybe a little trepidation around this issue.
Clearly there was trepidation, because the FBI walked away from this very charge.
Yeah.
I mean, the FBI looked into this and said, no, we're not going there. The New York state AG looked at it and said, no, we're not going to go there. I mean, this is the third, this is the third run at this particular case. That's why I say that's the weaker case out of it. I mean, the Georgia case on obstruction of the election, I think, is the strongest case. And I don't think the Georgia prosecutors waiting to see what happened in New York wasn't waiting to see necessarily what was going to go on, but rather wanted to have the strongest case possible so that there would be no risk of losing.
Hey, Randy, we're talking to Randy Peeble, a Republican strategist. When the FBI walked away from this case, when the former AG or DA, excuse me, in New York walked away from this case, was that during the Trump presidency?
Yes, it was. Absolutely it was. I mean, they looked at it. And, I mean, the FBI looked at the federal attorney general has written a brief that says, you know, you can't indict a sitting president. Now, nobody's ever challenged that in court, but that is kind of the operating procedure of the federal government. And so the FBI looked at this case and went, is this enough to override the guidance that we've been given in the past by the Department of Justice on not indicting a sitting president?
Right. And we don't know that they walked away from this case based on the merits of their evidence, the merits of the case, as much as is this enough to challenge the precedent that you don't charge a sitting president?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And do you think that, as you said previously, you don't think there's any real fallout from this? Trump might see a fine, maybe at most, if it does end up going, I guess, to the point where he is found guilty in this. You don't think there's going to be jail time, anything like that for the former president?
No, not at all. Yeah. I mean, this is a financial crime. This is not a, you know, this is not one where he's going to end up behind bars. I don't suspect. I'm not a lawyer. But what it will do is force attention on what he tells his followers to do now. Because trying to claim that, hey, they're coming after me now, they're going to come after you next, and I'm just going, I haven't paid off a lot of porn stars lately, so I
was
going to
say, man, I feel safe. I feel safe from the New York AG or DA not coming after me for my porn star hush payments.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't do it during a presidential campaign. I mean, to me, that was the most open and shut part of this was, it was after, you'll recall, the infamous Access Hollywood tape
right.
in October of 2016, where his remarks, very graphic, that I'm not going to repeat, I have daughters, but his remarks were carried, and that's when this story was going to come out, and that's when this story was suppressed by Michael Cohen, and Michael Cohen went to prison for that. And now you have to ask yourself, well, if he went to prison for writing the check, didn't the guy write the check have some culpability here? And that's ultimately what what Adams in the city of New York decided. The culpability has to go to the person who wrote the check, not just that authorized the check, not just the one who delivered it and got reimbursed.
Many people are saying that this is severely politically motivated because Alvin Bragg ran on the idea that he would be pursuing charges against Donald Trump. Do you see any evidence in that? Do you feel like weight to that?
I do not have any inside information into what motivates Mr. Adams one way or the other. Obviously, given that others have not pursued this case, that's a legitimate charge to say, you know, it seems a little bit political, because if his name was John Smith, this case would not be brought.
Okay.
I mean, that's clear. Because his name's Donald Trump, it's being brought. So in that regard, absolutely, it's a political case. But guess what? A lot of court cases are political cases.
Randy, thank you so much for your time on such short notice, my friend. I appreciate it very much, and hopefully we can pull you on again and we can discuss this more at length at a future point in time. Once again, former President Donald Trump has been indicted by a grand jury in Manhattan for his involvement with Stormy Daniels and a $130,000 payment. Spike O'Neill, you're going to be picking this up on the other side with
Yes, I will.
Correct?
John Curley picked the wrong day to have other commitments, my friend.
This is very, very true.
Yep, I get to stay with Sherry Elker for the next 3 hours.
Stick around. Keep it locked on Cairo Radio. Going to continue this conversation over into the next hour. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye.